Hi, I'm Veronica Ricker with you here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Election years are as good as it gets for comedians. The late night guys usually have tons of A-list material in the lead-up months to November, and stars can be born on Saturday Night Live. This election season might be a little different, with writers and comedians lined up to see who can crack the code on funny, particularly in regard to Barack Obama. One writer went so far as to say, he's just not a comical figure. This hour we'll talk about finding the funny in election 2008. We have a troika of guests this morning, including Daryl Dixon Carr, who will be with us for a full hour. Daryl Dixon Carr is associate professor in the Department of English at the University of California, Santa Barbara. No, I think we've got that wrong. It's actually Southern Methodist University in Dallas. Sorry about that. And we'll also be joined by Russell Peterson, an assistant professor of American Studies at the University of Iowa and author of Strange Bedfellows, How Late-Night Comedy Turns Democracy into a Joke. And Daryl Dixon Carr and Russell Peterson, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Good morning.
And
good
I also want to good morning. I want to put out a call for our callers to call in this morning as well and tell us what they think. They've probably seen the cover of The New Yorker, which depicted Barack Obama and his wife Michelle as terrorists. Well, do you think that went too far? And is Barack Obama too cool to be funny? Our number, as always, 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. And Daryl Dixon Carr, election years are usually high season for comedians, but this year is shaping up to be a little different. It seems like it's going to be harder to get the laughs, at least as far as Barack Obama. What kind of season are you expecting as far as the comedy culture?
I think the comedy is actually going to gear up, especially as the election gets closer and as tensions really get higher. I think comedy plays upon... most humor plays upon a certain degree of tension. It, you know, being shocked with something that you don't expect, or have somebody say something about a person that you really wish they wouldn't, but which may very well be true, or that hits close enough to the truth that you laugh because you're first of all shocked to hear somebody say it, but you're also you realize the truth of it, and you know it. It's jarring to you. It tickles your funny bone. But I think as people discover more about Barack Obama and his past, and about John McCain for that matter, and his past, because you know there are a lot of people throughout the country who really don't know either candidate very well. They know them as public personas, but not as real people. But the more people learn, the more comedians will find a mine about them.
Well, you know, there's that famous quote from The Simpsons. I think it's Homer who says it's funny because it's true. And as far as I can tell, you know, the comedians haven't been able to find that true funny thing about Barack Obama. Some people are just saying he's too cool. There's just not the material there, and they can't manufacture the stuff. It only resonates if it's actually there.
Yeah, I think what's interesting about that comment, I think, first of all, it's false. I think there's actually a lot that you can talk about Barack Obama if you really wanted to.
Like what?
People in the New York Times article that was written about the New Yorker article said that, you know, in past elections they could make fun of Al Gore's stiffness. They could make fun of John Kerry's you know, personal tics. You can parody Barack Obama quite easily. I mean, I've seen, for example, just a Kia commercial that, you know, actually, you know, has an actor, you know, who perfectly emulates Barack Obama, his movements and his stare, everything, and it's funny just because they nailed him so, you know, so well, and they nailed him so quickly. So you can make fun of just his persona, but as the article also states, as Jon Stewart has already done on his show, you know, the fact that Barack Obama is so iconic, you know, is something that you can mock as well. He's funny just because, you know, he seems so holy, and this is not for me to mock him. I think that's actually what makes him, it's going to make it much easier for people in the end to make fun of him, is that, you know, he really does seem to be untouchable, but we all know he has feet of clay, and the more you read about him, you do realize he's very human. and that he, for example, he's a very ambitious politician, like many politicians, and that I think is ultimately what comedians are going to latch on to, is the fact that he really is somebody who's moving forward, who's moving higher, regardless of what happens in the election. Barack Obama's future, political future, is going to be very bright in many ways. And I think the fact that he is somebody who is such a dynamic figure is worthy of mocking. People can't believe that somebody can be so dynamic and charismatic.
You're echoing a bit of what Jon Stewart said in that same article. He said, so far our take is that he's positioning himself to be on a coin.
Right.
Which is that's an interesting take. Kind of sounds like what you're saying there. And Russell Peterson, I take it you think it might be a good thing that the comedians are a little slow on the uptake. You think maybe we should be taking all of this, the comedy included, a little more seriously?
Yeah, I do, and I think that I want to clarify at the outset that I'm not against comedy. I think it's a really important part of our political discourse, and what I try to do in my book is to kind of educate people to be better consumers of comedy, I guess. I'm going to take issue just with a little bit of what Professor Dixon Carr said about. I think you're right about Barack Obama and his persona and his style and his ambition and so forth all being eminently mockable. And I think you're also right that as we get to see more of him, and remember he's been on the national stage not nearly as long as John McCain has or as Al Gore was when he was running, that it'll get easier to pick up on what's funny about him. But I think that it's not so much what's human and surprising and shocking about people that become the way in for comedians, but what's sort of inhuman and predictable about them. Comedy, especially the kind of political comedy that we see most of the time, kind of likes to reduce politicians to sort of mechanical men, kind of machines that do the same thing over and over, that have the same catchphrases over and over. It likes to reduce them to a single or just a couple of traits, and that's been hard to do so far with Obama, harder than it's been to do with Gore or with either of the Clintons, who sort of seem to lend themselves to that a little more easily.
Sounds like you're describing a bit of a funhouse mirror effect where comedy can amplify the wrong thing and take the focus off of what matters.
Yeah, and I think while people do recognize and respond to a perception of something being funny because it's true, I think that the truths that comedians decide on can kind of take on a life of their own to the point where they exclude other equally important truths. You know, the whole notion that Al Gore was always bragging about his accomplishments and that he said he invented the Internet is largely a fabrication. It wasn't really that true, but it became perceived as true to the point where comedians could make all kinds of jokes about Al Gore inflating his resume and his accomplishments to the extent that it's the basis in truth that people were responding to in those jokes was really largely a creation of the jokes, you know, mm-hmm. of earlier jokes, and it kind of took on a life of its own rather than being something that was a real truth.
But if people allow themselves to be distracted like that, allow themselves to get micro-focused on whatever a truth is perceived to be, I mean, isn't that the lookout of the individual person? Isn't that their responsibility? I mean, the job of the late-night guys is to make jokes and to make us laugh, and they're doing that. Why should they lay off just because we can't handle it?
I don't believe that they should lay off. And that's what I mean by saying that I'd like to educate people to be better comedy consumers. I do think that it has a lot to do with us, the audience. At the same time, I do think that you have some responsibility if you have a national forum, even if that national forum is exists just mainly to make people laugh. To you know, you have a national stage, you have a large audience, you're speaking to millions of people. You should make an effort to get things right. That's kind of my objection to the New Yorker cover. I don't object to the fact that they're engaging in satire. I don't object to the fact that satire might be taken wrong or might offend people. What I object to is I don't think they did a good job of it. I think that they blew it.
What did they do wrong?
I agree with Russell, if I can step in.
Yeah.
I think that it's very poorly executed satire, mainly because the frame of the satire is just wrong.
Explain what you mean by that.
Well, in a lot of satire, the way you convey the irony is present is you have some indication, some clue that what you're presenting to your audience is not what you want them to believe, and so you present somebody who contrasts or who will let you know that this is not supposed to be taken straight. So several people have suggested, for example, that they could have had the picture on the cover be in, say, for example, a thought balloon by somebody who is an avowed enemy of the Obamas or who hates the Obamas, say, you know, a Rush Limbaugh or Bill O'Reilly or somebody,
right,
you know, who, or anybody who might be generating a lot of these rumors and false stories about the Obamas, it would be a nightmare by some of the people who are generating these kinds of rumors. You could create another kind of contrast. You could actually have, for example, because this would be so outrageous and unbelievable, more people might get the joke. You might have, you know, John McCain and his wife in the same exact positions, wearing the same costumes. And it would be a much more subtle joke. I think a lot fewer people would get it. It'd be much more outrageous. But it would be a really deep, abiding irony that people would pick up on, that if the rumors about the Obamas, if people didn't believe that the rumors about the Obamas were untrue, they would certainly see that they were untrue about the McCains, and they would therefore turn back on the stories about the Obamas and realize how ridiculous those stories are.
Well, it seems pretty clear that the guys at the New Yorker thought that this was so out there and outlandish that no one could possibly take it as, you know, truth, complete with a terrorist fist bump. I mean, I think they probably thought they were in that area where it became pretty clear.
I think New Yorker readers, many New Yorker readers might get that. But New Yorker readers arguably are fairly sophisticated. And would probably pick up on that. They're used to seeing this sort of thing from the New Yorker. If you're not a typical New Yorker reader, you might not get the irony. And I think, you know, as Russell also mentioned, irony is something that people miss. People do not get it many times. I think a lot of people, you know, would see the cover and they do get the joke. You know, they realize this is so, all these rumors are so outrageous. How ridiculous that anybody would believe all these things about the Obamas. A lot of people do understand that, but there are many people for whom they see something that's ironic, and they will read it straight. And you really have to go through all the steps to explain to them how ridiculous this is and to give them the frame so they would understand how irony works. It doesn't mean that they're less intelligent. It just means that some people just don't grasp irony right away, and they really do need to have it spelled out for them.
But those aren't really the readers of the New Yorker. The readers of the New Yorker, just like you said, do get irony. So in a way, it's sort of preaching to the choir. It's not as though this cover ran on, you know, the cover of Guns and Ammo. That would have been different.
Yeah, that would be pretty dangerous. And I think even more people would be angry at it than they would. What I think a lot of people are objecting to with the cover is the fact that, first of all, they're just reproducing a lot of the rumors. Well, after some of the stories, anyway, have either died or they've died in the minds of the general public. And so, in a sense, it's piling on or bringing back stories and ideas, rumors that really, first of all, were absurd to begin with and really don't need repeating. And they're doing it, you know, well after the fact, and just really piling on something that doesn't need to be placed before the public again.
If I can jump in here, I mm-hmm. think that is the main problem with it. They're acknowledging that these rumors are out there and depicting them, but they're not really saying anything about them. They're not. To me, that is unsuccessful satire. One of my favorite things I've seen in response to this was another piece satirizing the controversy by Steve Young on the Huffington Post humor site 23/6, and the headline was something like "Satire Sues the New Yorker." And the idea was, you know, if you just call this, okay, we're just going to depict these ideas that are out there without giving a clear judgment or commentary or really saying anything other than just recapitulating this stuff, then it's not really satire, or it's right. not successful satire anyway. It's just a picture of some things that people have said. And to me, that's one of the main reasons it fails.
Let's take a break right now. I'm sorry, we'll come right back and talk some more about this. We're talking this hour with Daryl Dixon Carr, Associate Professor of English at Southern Methodist University, and Russell Peterson, Visiting Assistant Professor of American Studies at the University of Iowa and author of Strange Bedfellows, How Late Night Comedy Turns Democracy into a Joke. Hoping you'll call in this hour with your take on both the New Yorker cover and whether or not this election season is going to be funny. Do you think Barack Obama will end up being a funny character or not? Are you getting tired of jokes about John McCain? They can't last forever. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. Still to come this morning. Hope you'll stay with us for next hour as we talk about Google and whether or not it's changing our brains, the internet in specific. As we talk with the author of the article, is Google making us stupid? And then at 12:30, it's Chapter a Day. Carl Schmidt reads Crossing to Safety by Wallace Stegner. Veronica Rickert back with you. I'm here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we talk about finding the funny in Election 2008. The New Yorker sort of stuck its toe in the water, got a little burn, people disagreeing about whether or not that cover actually worked as satire, and also whether or not it's possible to find something funny about Barack Obama, or is he just too cool a guy to find the handle on funny? The number to call this morning to join us is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. And we're joined this hour by Daryl Dixon Carr, who is the Associate Professor of English at Southern Methodist University, and Russell Peterson, author of Strange Bedfellows, How Late Night Comedy Turns Democracy into a Joke. And let's go to the phones now and take a call from Jen in Madison. Hey, Jen, you're on the air.
Hey. I happen to disagree with your guest about the New Yorker, the cover. I thought it was brilliant. And the reason why I think it was brilliant is because I think it finally put out there what everybody or what certain media pundits have been insinuating over the last, well, year or whenever the primaries began. And when your guest said that these kind of rumors have been kind of, you know, squelched and no one's really talking about them or believe them anymore, I think that's completely false because I just received an email from someone, yes, 2 or 3 days ago saying how they thought Obama was a Muslim terrorist, and this was before the New Yorker cover came out. And so I think the rumors are still out there, and I think that this kind of threw it back into the faces of all the media pundits that have been insinuating this, because now the same very people who have been insinuating this idea are now saying how appalled they are about this cover and how insulting it was and how it was inappropriate and out of line. And so now I feel like that all those rumors are finally squashed and they're going to have to try to find some other way to smear Obama.
And Russell Peterson, what do you think?
Well, I would disagree that it's the same people that promulgated the rumors that are objecting to the cover. I think the people objecting to the cover are the people who are objecting to the rumors, by and large. I do think that the caller makes a valid point, one that I've heard other people make, that this cover at least gets a conversation started, and I do think the conversation is valuable. That doesn't mean that I take back what I said about it not working as satire. I might point out that G. Gordon Liddy said on his radio show in response to a question about this cover, the New Yorker finally got it right, and that other people discussing this in internet forums and whatnot have, you know, argued between, oh, this cover is satire, don't you get it, and other people will write in saying, well, it works because it has a grain of truth, which I think is problematic, to say the least, and I think it certainly points back to the point that both Professor Dixon Carr and I were trying to make earlier about this, that yes, it's an attempt at satire, but it's too ambiguous and too open-ended to sort of be very effective as satire.
Yeah, and I think part of the problem is that it's too broad of a satire. The people being mocked really in the cover, what the cover intends to mock are the people who are spreading the rumors. But it leaves the question of who's actually spreading the rumors open when, you know, the fact of the matter is that there are specific people who have started the rumors or who have promulgated them actively, and anyone or all of those people could have, for example, been put on the cover as imagining this, and that would have, you know, made the point. It would have rightly ridiculed those people. You can't ridicule the people who are spreading the rumors via the internet, which is how they've also been spread. But you can, you know, point out specific people who are spreading the rumors and make them look ridiculous for imagining and promulgating these kinds of rumors and stories.
And Russell Peterson, I know you've got to get going, but I want to thank you for joining us this morning. It's been great to talk with you.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Thank you. We've just been speaking this first half hour with Russell Peterson, visiting assistant professor of American Studies at the University of Iowa and author of the book Strange Bedfellows, How Late Night Comedy Turns Democracy into a Joke. And we're going to pick up another guest here for the second part of the show. We'll be joined by Bill Carter now, who is a journalist at the New York Times. And his article was called Want Obama in a Punchline? First Find a Joke. And Bill Carter, thank you for being with us.
Nice to be with you.
We've been talking this morning both about the New York Times cover and whether it qualifies as effective satire, but also about whether or not, you know, as your article says, it's going to be possible to find the funny as far as Barack Obama goes, or whether we're just going to have to endure jokes about, you know, the periphery and not so much the man. What is your take on whether or not these late night guys are going to be able to find the funny in Barack Obama?
Well, I should first point out that it was the New Yorker cover. I think you said the New York Times.
Oh, I'm sorry. My faux pas, yeah.
But, well, I know these guys, and I know they'll find something. You know, they'll continue to find something. I thought it was interesting. John Stewart said to me, you know, we're like carrying birds on a wire, waiting for the victim to get weak so we can attack. And, you know, I think Obama's been careful. He's been careful. He hasn't, stepped into something huge that becomes sort of the automatic joke about him. Each candidate sort of has an automatic area that they then become satirized for. And right now, McCain's age is so overused by the late night guys, mm-hmm. It's just incredible. I think one reason is they don't have an angle on Obama, so they continue to just go back to McCain. It's the easy joke. Remember, these guys have to write, whatever, 10, 15, 20 jokes a day, or deliver that many. They write many more. And so they're looking for a hook all the time. I thought it was interesting. Several of the people I talked to said the same thing, which is that Obama has not given them an angle because he's not buffoonish. That's an interesting thing to say, because really that started, well, it didn't start, but it became sort of easy with Bush. Bush is buffoonish to them, and it makes it very easy to do jokes. And this guy is kind of, well-spoken. He hasn't said a lot of dumb things, and it becomes more difficult for them to do it then.
Do you think there's an aspect of sort of the late night writers, at least some of them, being hit with an attack of social responsibility? I know you quote a writer named Mr. Barry in the article, and he says, I think that some of us were maybe too quick to caricature Al Gore and John Kerry, and there's maybe some reluctance to do the same thing to him, meaning Barack Obama. Do you think that maybe the late night crowd, some of them are wondering whether they should walk a little more carefully?
I think that proves that. That guy definitely feels that way. There's a sense, I guess, among some of them who may be Obama supporters that they don't want to undermine this guy. But more interesting than that to me is that occasionally when they have done jokes about Obama, the audience has resisted. The audience in the actual theater where they're performing in a studio has resisted. Most famously when Stewart went to make a segment really about Obama switching on campaign financing, the audience just kind of, they almost booed at him. and he turned to them and he said, hey, people, it's okay to laugh at this guy, too.
And I wonder if it worked.
Well, and his point to me was, we have to do it. I mean, we know we're going to do it. Well, if the guy's elected, they're going to do it. So the audience is going to have to warm up to it. But another writer said, look, the audience seems to think this guy's a fresh face. He's new. I kind of like him. Don't pick on him yet. And there's a resistance in the audience.
It's an interesting thing. I don't know if I've seen that before.
I haven't really seen it either. And I think it's kind of interesting. And it may bespeak that people who want change are sort of desperate for it. And they don't want the comics to get in the way. They don't want anybody to get in the way.
Let's go back to the phones now and grab a call from Vic in Duluth. Hi, Vic. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Great. I was offended as an African-American with the cover of the New Yorker magazine for the simple fact that I don't think it's right to portray a black man, his wife, because he's running for president, as a terrorist. When he has no ties to terrorism, he's burning the American flag. His wife got big lips and an afro. I felt that was borderline racism, and I don't think they really took in consideration from an African American perspective how that would impact us. It's like saying it's okay to make fun of our traits,
mm-hmm.
and then throwing some traits that Barack Obama doesn't even include. Like, if you're gonna joke, shouldn't it be like funny, or shouldn't it be like kind of true? You shouldn't make things up, right?
Right.
I'd like to respond to that because I think he makes an excellent.
Sure, Daryl Dixon Carr.
Yes, I think what was really insidious in the cover, a lot of people I think found offensive, was first of all, I mean the one group that's being mocked implicitly is first of all are Muslims, whether or not the people in the writer or the artist intended that. But also what's being mocked is, I think, a whole part of African-American history. And this is what a lot of people who have been really opposing Michelle Obama have been bringing up. They keep trying to portray her as some kind of radical, any little thing they can mine from her history that defines radical to them, not to her or to many African-Americans, but to them, they want to try to exploit that she's an angry black woman. Michelle Obama, they keep trying to portray her as an angry black woman, which is another stereotype that's found in the larger society. They're also, in a sense, they're trying to bring up the entire legacy of the 1960s and try to put that on Michelle Obama's shoulders, or for that matter, on Barack Obama's shoulders, or on Reverend Wright's shoulders, on the shoulders of a lot of these characters. And that's what they're really trying to do, is to put this kind of fear into the public about what they see as the negative aspects of African-American culture and history. And Michelle Obama is being made an icon of that, which and the cover just reproduces that and I think that's where it really falls flat, because it doesn't even first of all, it puts an afro on her, a natural, which is just absurd, and it's just bringing up, again, many more stereotypes that are very grotesque.
And Bill Carter, do you want to respond to Vic?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I think, what they were trying to do was to do this extremely broad satire of what the negative criticisms are of the Obamas, but Stephen Colbert said to me, well, openly, that David Remnick, the editor of The New Yorker, said he was trying to do on the cover what Stephen Colbert does on his show every night, which is this very broad satire. And Stephen Colbert said, yes, that is true. What he does is he plays a blowhard character who is like Bill O'Reilly and is, in fact, is very hostile to Obama and is saying very foolish things on the air, which are funny and automatically seen as funny. The problem is The New Yorker is not like the character that Stephen Colbert plays. You don't expect that from The New Yorker. So the expectation isn't the same. You don't go to The New Yorker expecting to see Bill O'Reilly. And therefore, when you see that, you automatically know it's a joke. And I think that's the big difference, that Colbert's the one guy on Late Night that's getting away with. Every night he tells a joke about, he brings on, like, a representative of another religion. His joke is Obama's looking for a new religion since he broke with Pastor Wright, and he'll ask someone who's a Buddhist or a Hindu, so in your religion, can you convert from being a secret Muslim? And the audience knows it's a joke because it's the blowhard idiot making this joke, and that doesn't work if the fundamental mechanism isn't already seen that way. I think that's one of the big misses of the cover.
You've also got layers and layers of visual cues that go along with the medium of television that you don't have in, you know, basically flat print there. I mean, if you don't get that Stephen Colbert is satirical, you're pretty much a stump. But with The New Yorker, there are cues, I suppose, that you could miss.
That's exactly right. And I think the other interesting thing for the late night guys is all the hosts are white. Every single one of them that I interviewed, all the big ones are white, and virtually all the writers are white. And, by the way, the entire audience seems to be white. If you go to one of those shows, it's mostly white people in the audience. So this sensibility is missing there. And it was interesting, I talked to this comic, David Alan Greer, an African-American comic, and he said, look, when we're in the clubs, black comics, we don't have any trouble making jokes about Obama. It's absolutely free reign for us. Now, I couldn't use any of them in the newspaper that he told me, but, you know, it's absolutely easy for them to do it because the context is there. And I think the white late night guys are having trouble. They don't know how far to go. What's a step over into racism? They're trying to avoid that. They really don't want to do it.
Let's take another phone call now. We've got Brian on the line from Madison. Hi, Brian, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm just concerned about the conversation because it seems like the way that satire has been defined limits the freedom of speech in a lot of ways. It seems like a lot of times in the ways that you're talking about the absurdities that don't really work or what makes the satire so funny to me. And I am a New Yorker reader, and I feel like we really need this outlook. And I think it's okay if it doesn't work for 100%. The way it's been talked about, it assumes that satire can work 100% of the time. And I think that it's more important to have a freedom of speech that runs at discussions, allows some people to have their cartoons. And I think that The New Yorker is an important forum because it points out that there's a large segment of a pretty educated audience that thinks that picture of Obama is completely absurd. And I just feel very strongly about that.
Thanks, Brian. You raise a good point there, and you make the point that satire is sort of by nature dangerous, and maybe if it's not danger, if it's not out there on the edge, then it's not being allowed to be what satire is by nature.
Well, I don't think anybody is saying that to be restricted from doing it. I mean, it's just if they do it and it doesn't work for everybody, they do open themselves to being criticized for it. That's not a First Amendment violation. The First Amendment would allow us to criticize it as much as it allows them to do it. The one difference I would say about The New Yorker is, yes, I think the educated audience that reads The New Yorker probably does get the joke, but it's also on the cover, sitting on a newsstand for the non-educated audience to see, and you have to sort of calculate the impact there.
And on top of that, I mean, one way that satire works, one of the points of satire is to ideally to push the people being satirized to do better somehow, or to at least to shape up, you know, their act. You satirize a figure so that he'll stop being, you know, if he's a buffoon, he'll stop being a buffoon, or he'll learn to bring that under control. Who is supposed to actually change after seeing the New Yorker article? Who is supposed to, you know, be pushed to be more noble or better or somehow to stop spreading rumors? I don't think that the cover accomplishes that purpose. It might make the readers of New Yorker, you know, who get the joke, feel that you know, those people are absurd and ridiculous, but it doesn't, does it actually do, accomplish something? Not all satire is very good at pushing people to that purpose, but that's what it's supposed to hint at, is that somebody needs to shape up, and the New York cover isn't very good at actually giving a really solid target for that kind of corrective purpose.
I'm going to take a quick break now, and then we'll come back and talk more about finding the funny in Election 2008, particularly in regards to the New Yorker cover. We're talking this hour with Daryl Dixon Carr, Associate Professor of English at Southern Methodist University, and Bill Carter, journalist for The New York Times, who wrote the article "Juan Obama in a Punchline? First, Find a Joke." We'll be hoping that you'll be joining us this hour as well, telling us what you think. Do you think the New Yorker cover went too far? And what about Barack Obama? Have we found the right formula for funny with him yet? And do you think we'll get to that point during this election? The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. Still to come today on Wisconsin Public Radio. After 2 o'clock, stay tuned for Talk of the Nation Science Friday. After 2, Science Friday looks at offshore drilling, the ins and outs of drilling, and how much oil is there, and when would it be available. It's coming up at 2 o'clock today on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert, back with you this morning as we talk about finding the funny in Election 2008. The New Yorker magazine has stuck a toe in the water, and there is a lot of debate about whether or not the satire depicted on that cover actually worked or not. And also, we're talking in specific about the article, "Want Obama in a Punchline? First Find a Joke," the idea that it's hard to find what's funny about Barack Obama. He might be too cool a candidate to skewer properly. We've got Daryl Dixon Carr with us. He's an associate professor of English at Southern Methodist University, and Bill Carter, journalist for The New York Times. And I'd like to go back to the phones right now. We've got a call here from Tom.
Obama's response to how did he respond to this thing? He didn't laugh it off. He took it very seriously. And you can't do that. You have to laugh at each other. When I was a page in Congress, Congress is a very funny place. Politicians are very funny, and they can laugh at each other. And we've gotten very serious in our history here. One of the things,
Tom, I think we surprised you there. You're on the air. Did you get all your comments there?
Well, no. Here's what I wanted to point out. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Congress, and the congressmen are always laughing and telling jokes to each other. It's a very funny place. I met most of the presidents since Truman, and they're very funny people. And I myself am running for president. I've announced on your show. It's presidentboyle.com is my website. And on there, I always try to put something funny, because they say a politician who can make people laugh is more dangerous than a politician who can't. And if you don't laugh at yourself, you cannot face the brutal truth. And you can warm people up to it. President Kennedy would tell a joke before he would go into his speech, because if you tell a little joke, people warm up to you, they put down their guard, and they can accept what you're trying to tell them. And Mr. Obama's response if you're going to tell a joke, you have to set it up. And if that cover had been put on the cover of Mad Magazine, the setup would have been already there, and people would have accepted it. But because it wasn't there, then we have all this conversation. And then nobody wants to appear to be a racist. So talking about Mr. Obama now is a difficult person for a white man to do, whereas opposed a black man can say anything he basically wants.
Well, thank you for the call, Tom. You raise a bunch of points there, but one I want to touch on right away is something that I was wondering about, is whether the fact that comedians are having a hard time getting a take on what makes Barack Obama funny could actually hurt him in the end, because those things that make people funny is often what humanizes them. What do you think, Bill Carter?
I think that, interestingly, is a factor that was raised by my colleague Maureen Dowd in a column after I wrote that piece. It's true. You have to kind of be able to laugh at the things people fun of you for. And I think Barack is actually funny. I mean, he's witty, and people tell me this in private. He's quite witty. And, of course, he did say, occasionally he says some very funny things. Like, he had a very good joke the other day about when Phil Graham called the country whiners. He said, "We already have one Dr. Phil." You know, he was able to make a joke that sounded genuine and witty. So I do think he's funny. I think the problem is that his candidacy is a is a breakthrough candidacy. It's new. It's obviously historic, and so there isn't a comfort factor yet with what he can say and what people can say about him. I think that's one thing, and that's why it's interesting. Jon Stewart on The Daily Show, one of the avenues he's exploring is that Obama's playing for history so much, it's like he's looking to be put on money, on a coin, you know, and that's a sort of a broad thing about him. And I think Obama himself will probably loosen them up by loosening up himself, because, you know, he's being cautious. I think he has to be cautious. He's got a lot of people out there gunning for him. I want to say that figuratively, because his ideas are threatening to some people. So he's got to have to be really careful. But it is true, he does need to be humanized. He does need to have fun with himself and allow people to have fun with him.
I think there's an interesting aspect to this that the caller brought up, that I find Jimmy Kimmel in the New York Times article, you know, has said, you know, there was a reverse racism going on. And I think that idea is absurd. That the New York Times article also said, Bill Carter's article said, that, you know, David Alan Greer says that black comedians make fun of him. It's not a case of black comedians being able to say what they want and white comedians not being able to say. But if there's an idea that somehow that the only way to make fun of Barack Obama is, you know, first of all, to bring out, for example, out a bunch of racial stereotypes, then I think that a lot of people are going to reject that, and they have. But it's akin to what the comedian Nick Adams once wrote. He says, you know, I don't care if you have your hair in cornrows while wearing a Fat Farm T-shirt at an R. Kelly concert. Black people don't get to be president, and white people don't get to use the N-word. Can we just call it even now? And there's almost like there seems to be a push for either comedians or some people in the public to want to know, when do we get the license to start making, you know, racial jokes about Barack Obama? And the short answer is, you know, that if to ask that question, you know, really begs a huge problem. There are people who really want to make those jokes. The New Yorker cover arguably, you know, made a push at one of those jokes and fell flat for trying to make that kind of humor part of its cover. I think that the fact of the matter is that there are many ways to make fun of Barack Obama as a politician that can have little to nothing to do with his race. And the New Yorker cover just raises too many of those issues, and that's again why it is so offensive to so many people.
Take another call now. We've got Dan on the line from Eau Claire. Hi, Dan, you're up.
Hi. The New Yorker is a magazine that's in financial trouble. They pulled the Miley Cyrus thing out of their hat. My gosh, they took pictures of a girl's back. And now they've got this. It's the equivalent of putting a traffic accident on your magazine cover. When this magazine is talked about, their sales go up. And they don't feel like putting Madonna or Britney Spears on the cover, so they do this.
That wasn't—the Miley Cyrus wasn't the New Yorker, though, was it, Bill Carter?
No, that was
No,
Vanity.
But I'm using this as an example. That was Vanity Fair.
And I don't think the magazine's in financial trouble at all. I don't think this was a play for money. I really don't. I don't think they were doing that. They obviously want attention. Magazines and, you know, publications are looking for attention. But David Remnick's a pretty serious guy. I mean, this is not something that was done lightly or frivolously for money. I think it may have been a misfire, but it wasn't done for venal reasons, I don't believe.
And Daryl Dixon Card, do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, I would just agree. The New Yorker has done, you know, very well. It was struggling, you know, 10 years ago, but it, you know, got reorganized, and it's actually, you know, many people would acknowledge this, it's doing very well. I do think that, you know, they probably did think very carefully about this, but I think they faced the same problem at the New Yorker as in many other parts of the media. As Bill said, regarding, you know, the comedy shows as well, there aren't a lot of African Americans, you know, in a lot of the major media these days, and you get very little balanced input. I mean, arguably, there should have been. I hope there would have been somebody at the New Yorker, you know, who might have said to the editor, you know, want to think about.
Sorry about that. Go ahead.
Yeah. You really want to think about this. You should redo this. You should reframe this. There should be another approach. You know, can we do a take two before this cover goes on? It doesn't have to be an African American, but I think that the fact that you have so few African Americans in the media, that is really letting some, you know, very poor decisions get out there in terms of what gets published and how things are framed and the like. And I think that this is a perfect example of that. And that, I think that's one conversation that needs to happen throughout, you know, the media world.
And we have an email from Brad in Milwaukee who wrote to say that the December 2006 New Yorker cover had Cheney sitting in an easy chair with a can of beer on the floor, and Bush had on an apron, was dusting Cheney's shoes. It implies Cheney was really the one in charge. And he says this one, the cover we're talking about with Barack Obama and his wife, is tougher to take. There are no right-wingers who want a black man as president. So I think Brad from Milwaukee is saying that the audience there is very different.
Yeah, that earlier cover, I mean, many books have been written about the relationship between Dick Cheney and George W. Bush in the White House, you know, where the power lies. There's a lot to substantiate, you know, a caricature of their relationship that would make sense, to make the humor really work. In the case of the current New Yorker cover, these again are fabrications that have been put out in public, or insinuations and innuendo about the Baramas, and that are not substantiated. And that's the big difference.
And Bill Carter, you were starting to say something there,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly the point. These things are made up. I mean, this is not. There's no validity to any of this. I mean, in fact, you know, what this is in essence, the smear about Obama. And look, you know, I was thinking about it. If the New Yorker had done this as a cartoon inside the magazine, what it would have done would have been like showing some crazy right-wing guy making this picture. You know, so you would see what it was that was happening. It would put it in some relative context. And on the cover, it doesn't have that. So that's essentially the problem about it. The context is missing, so you don't get the fact that it's playing on, yes, a complete ludicrous fabrication.
Let's grab another phone call. We've got Dave with us from Menominee. Hi, Dave. You're on the air.
Hi. I've got three quickies. Mm-hmm. Your guest kind of stole my thunder. I was going to say, if Rush Limbaugh had been standing at a palette, at a easel, with a palette and a paintbrush, and the cover would have been on his easel, everybody would have got it. Okay. Number two, I heard an interview with Barack Obama when they were hacking on him about bowling 37.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, yeah, but when I get to be president, I heard there's a bowling alley in the White House, but I'm going to tear it out and put in a basketball court. This is what he said.
Yes.
And I remember the radical black movement, or for lack of a better term, when all of people of that movement had afros. And when they said, this is who we are. When white people said, why do you wear your hair like that? This is who we are. But if white people depict them as this is who you are with an afro, how dare you? Okay, those are my three points.
All right, well, thank you so much for the call, Dave. And Daryl Dixon Carr, do you want to start with that?
Yeah, first of all, the picture of Michelle Obama, that's not who she is. You know, and where that particular picture comes from was from this rumor that started that there was a video of her out there, you know, berating Whitey. And there was one writer on TheRoot.com that pointed out, that said, you know that rumor had to be untrue because, first of all, nobody of Michelle Obama's generation would ever say Whitey. You know, that's something that's straight out of the 60s, and the only people who would start a rumor like that are people who know absolutely nothing about African-American culture as it currently stands and who are still stuck in the 60s. Michelle Obama wouldn't be wearing, that's not remotely close to what anybody actually knows about Michelle Obama. And that's what makes it so absurd. And there's nothing wrong with anybody wearing a natural. It's a beautiful, you know, it's natural hairstyle. But it's the fact that it's linked to all these other images, of African Americans as fearful, as Manchurian candidates that have really existed from slavery days forward. The idea that African Americans somehow are less patriotic, that they cannot be trusted, that they're here to undermine the country, that this is going to be a disruption of the country. All those rumors, all those stereotypes, all those fears are really wrapped up in a lot of the rumors about the Obamas, and for that matter, in the New York cover.
And Bill Card-
I also wanted to note that the joke about the bowling alley, which, you know, that's a great joke. And one of the things that I guess it was Bill Maher said to me, you know, when he's, one of the jokes he has is, you know, the expectation among one of the things that that's been criticized or joked about Obama is that he's, quote, not black enough, end quote. And he said his joke is, what does he have to do, go out and dunk? Hey, the guy bowled a 37. That's black enough for me. I mean, so he made it at least a good use of that. That's what the humorists have to do, is to find, you know, a good use of what is in the media about Obama. The fact that he bowled poorly was useful to them for a while. That was okay, and that was okay to make fun of that.
Well, I want to
deprecating.
I want to thank you both so much for being on with us this hour. It's been fascinating. We'll have lots more to talk about as the season goes on. But thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Daryl Dixon Carr, Associate Professor of English at Southern Methodist University, and Bill Carter, a journalist for The New York Times, author of the article, One Obama in a Punchline, First Find a Joke. I want to thank Sarah Carroll for on-air production this morning and Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour. I'm Veronica Rickert, here with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.